May it please the Court, Richard Abbott on behalf of the appellants who are the owners of the Christiana Town Center Shopping Center. This appeal involves one narrow issue, which is the meaning of the term major plans as used in the Newcastle County Unified Development Code, or UDC. We contend that the appellants contend that the court below erred on the grounds that it misinterpreted the meaning of the term major plans for numerous reasons, which I'll get into in detail in a moment. Before I do that, I thought it might be helpful to have a brief thumbnail sketch of the facts. The rezoning and major land development plan that are at issue proposed to redevelop, as the UDC calls it, a 45-acre site which is currently developed with a 286,000-square-foot Sears appliance scratch and dent center and warehouse. It's located near the intersection of I-95 and Route 273 at that interchange, and it takes access from a road known as Eagle Run Road. The plan, which is called the Promenade at Christiana, is proposing a 447,000-square-foot commercial shopping center, and there is also an associated accompanying rezoning request that was from BP Business Park to CR Commercial Regional. Now, what happened in this situation and the genesis of this, or sorry, the thrust of this case, is that the UDC has a provision that generally requires that plans and rezoning such as this, both of them, plan and rezoning, comply with Article 11, which contains what are called traffic concurrency requirements. The first one says you perform a traffic impact study. The second one says the results of that traffic impact study either have to show that traffic level of service D can be accomplished despite the development, or that road improvements can be made in order to bring the level of service to LOSD.
So, just a factual question, Mr. Abbott. There was, I understand, a study of some lesser level that was made in this case, but it didn't rise to the level of a traffic impact study. I forget the technical name of it. What is exactly the difference? I mean, what's at stake here?
Well, there was a traffic operations analysis that was completed. The methodology is largely the same as a traffic impact study. The difference is that a TOA, traffic operations analysis, has no teeth. In other words, it says you have a failing intersection, period. A TIS, combined with the LOSD requirement, says if you have a failing intersection and you can't cure it, then you can't get approval. Article 11 of the UDC forbids county council from approving any plan and or any rezoning if you can't accomplish LOSD.
TIS imparts what information precisely that a TOA does not?
There's not a whole lot of difference in terms of the analytical process. The major point is that if you do a TOA, as happened in this instance, the end result was that under the circumstances that could be, the road improvements that could be performed, the best LOS that could be achieved was LOSF.
Well, tell me if I've got this right. Is the difference that one of consequence rather than of what actually occurs in the course of the study?
That
is,
yes,
if you call it one thing, there's one legal consequence, and if you call it something else, there's a different legal consequence?
Correct.
But whatever it is you're calling amounts to the same thing.
Well, the evaluation methodology, as I said, is, I believe, largely the same. I'm not being a traffic engineer, I don't want to say it's exactly the same, but it's virtually the same. And I think that's a fact that was concluded by the court below. However, at the end of the day, when you complete a TOA, there's no requirement that you comply with the LOSD standard. Under the county's traffic concurrency requirements in Article 11 of the UDC, the TIS has to explain how you can get to LOSD. Now, sometimes the end result of that is you can't, in which case your plan cannot get approved and or your rezoning may not be approved as a matter of law. So, and in this instance, the conclusion of the TOA was that LOSD could not be achieved, and therefore it was mandatory for the plan to be denied or effectively rejected. So
I misunderstood. I thought that there were going to be traffic improvements made, and that the plan was then conditioned upon coming to terms with DLDOT about the costs of making those traffic improvements.
That is partially correct. There were conditions imposed as notes on the plan. However, even if all of those improvements are constructed, LOSD will not be achieved. So the penultimate question in the case is whether or not there was an exemption from the LOSD standard because this is a redevelopment plan, and to state it more specifically, whether the term major plans includes within its purview rezonings. And, of course, we start out from the plain meaning rule approach to statutory construction and point out first the word rezonings is absent. That's fairly obvious. The next question is, what does major plans mean? Under the UDC, as well as Chapter 1 of the County Code, the common and ordinary and dictionary definition should be applied.
Let me interrupt you for just a minute. You know, you used the word statutory construction. My question relates to the standard of review. As you point out in your brief, the Vice Chancellor thought that the standard that he had to apply was deferential. You've argued that it's de novo. I assume you cited the same cases to him that you've cited to us, yet he seemed to rely on State Farm. But I look at this UDC as an ordinance, which appears to be a statute, and the Court of Chancery was looking at it as a regulation. Now, putting that aside, after we decided State Farm, we've decided the DePasquale case, and we said even if it was a regulation, it would only get some deference, not complete deference. So I guess my first question to you is, how do you characterize the UDC? Is it the equivalent of a statute?
Yes. It's the positive law of Newcastle County. Under state code, it's codified, so these are not just a set of miscellaneous ordinances that are numbered. It goes into, you know, section and subsection codification, and just like the Delaware Code, it constitutes the positive law. In this case, it's the equivalent of a statute as well because, of course, the zoning authority has been delegated by the General Assembly to the county. So this
so
is no different.
Look at our court's latest en banc pronouncement that Justice Jacobs did for our court in the case of Newcastle County and the University of Delaware, if this is a statute, then we're not talking about deference at all. We're talking about de novo review.
Correct.
Okay.
Now, the only other thing I'd point out is in the University of Delaware case, you were talking about the County Department of Land Use, which is an administrative agency. In this case, we don't even have an administrative agency. So I would submit that not even the due weight standard would apply because this is a legislative branch enacting a statute.
Well, I think in DePasquale, which was en banc, we moved away from that also when we said we weren't going to address the Chevron issue, that maybe state agencies get some deference in a regulation, but we didn't sign up for Chevron, and I think that's still an open question in Delaware. But what's absolutely clear in Delaware is if it is a statute, it's reviewed de novo and there's no deference.
And that is the appellant's contention, Your Honor. As I was saying, we believe the term major plans is clear and unambiguous and therefore no construction is needed. And I've reviewed that essentially. The next points are that if there is an ambiguity in the term major plans, then the statutory construction principles which should apply lead to the result that it means major land development plan. The first point to make is that in the definitional section of the UDC, the term major land development plan is anything other than, and I'm sorry, I didn't realize this clock wasn't working.
That was my fault.
That I was going to reserve some time, so I'll just finish on this point. The major land development plan is anything that is not a minor land development plan. And in the So basically, you look to minor land development plan to determine what a major land development plan is. And in there, it tells you that a minor does not include anything in excess of 50,000 square feet. And then it uses the term major plan, which shall be treated as a major plan. So there are other places in the UDC where the term major plan is used, and it's used as an abbreviation for major land development plan. So given that, I would ask if I could reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Yeah.
And you'll still have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Fornstein, good afternoon.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Richard Fornstein on behalf of Appalese, KRC, and Sears. With me at council table is my partner, Jim Taylor. And also with me at council table is Brian Merritt, the attorney for Newcastle County. Mr. Merritt has graciously allowed me to make the entire argument for the appellees.
Well, can you start with your view on the standard of review? You heard what I said, I thought we've said in prior cases. That was the form of a question. But is this ODC really an ordinance that's like a statute?
Your Honor, I heard what you said, and it troubled me, and so I wanted to get right to that. I believe that when a county council acts in a in connection with zoning regulations, and they're referred to as regulations in parlance.
But this is not the Newcastle County zoning code.
Well, sometimes it's called a code, sometimes it's called regulations. But this court in BC Developments, which is a case cited in the briefs, I didn't cite it for this point because this issue really didn't come up until the reply brief, but this court said, in the realm of rezoning, the power of council, that is county council, is analogous to that of an administrative agency, since the fundamental power to regulate land use rests with the General Assembly. And my belief and my understanding, and indeed I think the Chancery Court's understanding, is that with respect to statutes that are passed by the General Assembly and then being interpreted by an administrative agency, there's no particular reason why an agency should be shown deference by the courts. They didn't draft the statute. The General Assembly did, and in fact, courts are often better, I think, at interpreting. They have more experience than agencies in interpreting statutes. But the rule is that if an agency is interpreting its own regulations, things it passed, it enacted, then they are going to be shown deference unless their interpretation is found to be clearly erroneous. So they are shown the deference.
And what's the case you're relying on?
BC Development Associates, it's Newcastle County v. BC Development Associates, 567 Atlantic 2nd, 1271. This is from 1989. And again, the court said that in the realm of rezoning, the power of council is analogous to that of an administrative agency. And that was cited by the court below as he moved to the deference issue.
Well, then he went to State Farm.
Yeah.
And what I find confusing in our jurisprudence is State Farm was the insurance commissioner interpreting an insurance regulation written by Justice Walsh on behalf of the court for a panel. But then Justice Walsh, for the en banc court, wrote DePasquale, which said we weren't going to adopt Chevron, and he talks about some deference if it's an agency, and I'm just not sure where we are.
Well, let me address that. Of course, the DePasquale case, again, dealt with an agency interpreting a statute.
Correct.
Now, this court said two things in the DePasquale case, and I think context, of course, matters. In footnote 9, of the DePasquale case, this court said, in part, deference to administrative agency determination of fact based on expertise is specifically contemplated by the Administrative Procedures Act, and it went on to quote the APA. And then it said, this court said, similarly, a reviewing court may be expected to defer to the construction placed by an administrative agency on regulations promulgated or enforced by it unless shown to be clearly erroneous. So that statement is made in the DePasquale case. And then when talking about Chevron, which, again, Chevron is a federal case, but it deals with the interpretation of statutes passed by Congress, this court said, we expressly decline to adopt such a standard with respect to review of an agency's interpretation of statutory law and reaffirm our plenary standard of review. While an agency's construction of a regulation promulgated may be entitled to some deference, it is unnecessary for this court to review the applicability of Chevron. So,
and then in the next paragraph, we went on to overrule Eastern Shore.
Mm-hmm. Which dealt with statutory interpretation. This was a statutory interpretation case, not a case dealing with an agency's interpretation of its regulations.
So and just your position is Newcastle County is an agency.
Correct.
And that this uniform
development code
is a regulation.
Just like when DENREC passes regulations, it's acting pursuant to authority granted by the General Assembly to make law in an area, whatever you call that law. But when DENREC interprets its own regulations, it gets deference. When Newcastle County interprets its own regulations, it gets deference.
Well, even if those characterizations are accurate, is it not the case that the standard under current case law is some deference as opposed to complete deference?
Well, Your Honors, in preparing for this morning's or this afternoon's oral argument, I did a little additional research, and I want to cite a case that I shared with Mr. Abbott earlier today. Earlier this summer, on July 27th, 2009, this court issued an order in the case of Ward v. Department of Elections. And in this opinion, which is only 5 weeks old, this court said in part, furthermore, judicial deference is usually given to an administrative agency's construction of its own rules in recognition of its expertise in a given field. Therefore, an appellate court will only reverse an agency's interpretation of its own rules if that interpretation is clearly wrong. And this is unpublished, the Westlaw site, 2009, Westlaw 224413. I wasn't aware of this when we were doing
perhaps you'll send that.
I've got copies, and I'll leave them with you.
Who were the three justices on that case?
Berger, Jacobs, and Ridgely. This was an order, and I assume it was done without an argument.
Well, let's assume, try to clear away some of the cobwebs for the moment, if that's possible, and assume for purposes of this question that the standard is some deference.
Okay.
Would that matter to your position?
Your Honor is exactly right. And the answer is it does not, because for two reasons. First, I believe, and I do want to read the two sentences before I step down, I believe the two sentences are clear and that the county's interpretation is absolutely correct. And neither the county nor appellees, surprisingly, believe the statute's ambiguous. Vice Chancellor Strine, whom obviously I respect a great deal, looked at what my colleague said, looked at what we said, found that there was ambiguity, and then he said he was going to defer to the county. But whether you defer to the county or you give due weight to the county, I really don't see any substantive difference, because I think the county's position makes sense from a policy point of view. There are policy reasons why the county took the position it did, in fact, why it adopted the statute it did. And the action it took here in rezoning the property is consistent with that policy of wanting to encourage the redevelopment of old sites, wanting to encourage their bringing up these old sites to modern standards, and wanting to fight suburban sprawl and all the evils associated with that.
The way I read your brief, you know, putting aside the standard of review, you would affirm, come out the same way as a matter of construction, whether there's some deference, no deference. But in your brief, in a footnote, you have a slightly different rationale than the Vice Chancellor.
Well, in his opinion, we cited two different sections of the redevelopment provisions of the UDC where the drafters of the redevelopment provisions referred to major plans, you know, with or major plans without rezonings. And in both those instances, there wouldn't have been a need for them to talk about major plans with rezonings or major plans without rezonings unless rezonings were included in major plans normally. And the Vice Chancellor took the one example that we raised to suggest that maybe major plans did not include rezonings. And as I tried to explain in the footnote, but perhaps it was confusing, I disagreed with his decision. I think it's clear both ways. He found ambiguity. Either way, it still gets you to the same place, which is the county's action should be upheld.
Mr. Forreston, I'm not sure what, if any, legal significance it has, it does appear that the fact that drove this litigation, or part of it anyway, is that your client obtained a TOA but not a TIS. You may recall that I asked Mr. Abbott what the difference was, and basically the answer that he gave me was, in terms of how the process is conducted, not much difference. There is a difference, however, of legal consequence. I believe that in your brief you stated that one of the reasons that a TIS was not obtained is because it would involve a lot of expense. Two questions. One is a TIS normally more expensive? And secondly, are there any other significant differences between the two types of studies?
Well, again, with the same caveat that Mr. Abbott gave, not being a traffic engineer, my understanding from our conversations with our traffic engineer is that, strictly speaking, if you were going to do a TIS, you go out and generate a lot of the data for that TIS with traffic counts that you actually perform as the firm doing the TIS. One of the advantages of a TOA is that you're allowed to rely on data generated by others, and in fact provided by DLDOT, Department of Transportation. So there is a cost difference in some of the legwork, but substantively the outputs are essentially the same. You get a report, it tells you what the level of service is going to be at different intersections under different scenarios. And I do want to make clear that it is possible to get to level of service, the acceptable levels of service, at all of the intersections. One of the things that you have to do to reach acceptable levels of service anywhere is there's a section of Old Baltimore Pike that would be converted from two-way traffic to one-way traffic. And that's an issue that DLDOT's been looking at for a number of years now. And if you do make that switch, then all the intersections would work at acceptable levels of service. But as Mr. Abbott pointed out, when you're doing a redevelopment plan, you're exempted from this level of service requirement. And it's interesting because even my colleague concedes that if there were no rezoning involved, if this ground was already zoned commercial and all we were doing was coming in and knocking down the old Sears warehouse and building a new shopping center, he wouldn't be able to make this argument, because he concedes that without a rezoning, the level of service standards do not apply. It's the Christiana Town Center's position that since there's a rezoning, we have to meet the level of service requirements. And one of the things that we said in our brief is that really doesn't make a lot of sense. It didn't make sense to the county. But, of course, remember, county council has discretion whether to rezone and permit this project to go forward or not. I mean, they saw the traffic study. They knew what its numbers meant. My colleague was there that night at the public hearing going on and on about how traffic was so bad in the area. And council listened to that, and they also saw the advantages that this plan presents. It's going to help alleviate downstream flooding issues because there's no stormwater management in the area right now. Eagle Run Road is going to be constructed, which is something DLDOT has long wanted. That's going to be a through road, and that's being constructed on our client's nickel. And they weighed all of that, and they reached the decision that they reached. So to me, not surprisingly, this rezoning makes a lot of sense, and I'm happy to say it also made sense to Newcastle County. But the difference between a TIS and a TOA, if you're doing a redevelopment plan, the only time you have to get a TIS is if DLDOT requires it. And if DLDOT had required it, then the level of service standards would have kicked in. But since DLDOT didn't require it, there was no need to meet the level of service requirements. And that's one of the several advantages that the county affords property owners who are redeveloping property that's already developed. It's one of the advantages they give to try to encourage people to do that rather than go find 30 or 40 acres somewhere further away that's been undeveloped, where presumably if you're further out, you don't have to worry about traffic congestion and that sort of thing. So I don't know if I answered Your Honor's questions about this agency issue or not, but seem to have drifted from that a bit. I want to correct one or two other points that were made. Christiana Town Center characterizes this case as being about the definition for a term, major plans. That's not a defined term in the UDC. This case is really, I believe, simply about two sentences in the redevelopment section of the code. And those two sentences simply say, an operational analysis may be required for major plans. A traffic impact study shall only be required if requested by DLDOT. Those two sentences appear in the redevelopment section of the code, and it's those two sentences that matter. And the way the county interprets this is, if you have a major plan, whether it includes a rezoning or not, here we did have a rezoning, they can ask for an operational analysis, which is what they did.
Well, Mr. Forreston, it appears that the two of you are arguing which battlefield do we fight on. If it's on your battlefield, which is the two-sentence battlefield, then your point is that you win. But what if we're on Mr. Abbott's?
Well, even if we're on Mr. Abbott's battlefield, we win anyway, because we've cited examples in our brief where in the redevelopment provisions of the code or in another instance of the code, the drafters said major plans with rezonings or major plans without rezonings. And those examples certainly suggest to me, and they suggested to the court below, that major plans include rezonings. Remember, you only make one application here. You only file one form with the county. And the only difference that we had with the court below is that one of our examples where it said major plans, including those with rezonings, the court took that to suggest that rezonings were somehow not included with major plans. He took the other example we made, and he conceded that, yeah, that made sense. That suggested rezonings can be a part of major plans. That told him there was ambiguity, which led him to the deference issue. As I said in our footnote in the brief that Justice Holland alluded to, I think both of them suggest that rezonings can be included with major plans. If I'm right, if KRC is right, then there's no ambiguity at all, and the county's position should be upheld as a matter of law. But if Vice Chancellor Stein is correct, and he's certainly a reasonable guy, there is ambiguity. He looked at it. He had to make a decision, and he found that the county's interpretation made sense. He gave it weight, whether you call it deference or great weight, and he ruled in favor of the county. So even if we're fighting over the term major plans, I think that the appellees still win. But if the drafters of the UDC intended for there to be a definition for major plans, there's a whole chapter at the end of the UDC with literally hundreds of definitions, and they never define that term. So that's why I think we're really talking about these two sentences and what they mean. That's why I want to fight on that battlefield, because I think that's the logical battlefield to fight over. I don't want to take up any more of this court's time than is necessary, and unless your honors have other questions, I'm happy to sit back down.
Thank you.
I'll address some of Mr. Forreston's points, I think maybe in reverse order. First, I guess I want to start out with the fact that the court below did not perform a plain meaning analysis. Instead, at least my reading of the opinion is that Vice Chancellor Strine applied statutory interpretation principles to create an ambiguity where certainly Christiana would contend none exists. First of all, it's clear that he didn't look at the definition of the words major and plans. The, as I said earlier, the UDC definitional section that Mr. Forston points out says, if any words or terms in this code are not herein defined, look to Webster's unabridged dictionary or look to other county code chapters. The term's not defined in any other county code chapter, so we look to Webster's. That's where we come up with the definition that it means a large diagram or drawing that's on a plane. That is, in essence, what you see in a typical plan, which is, in this case, the promenade at Christiana Plan. It's a large drawing that is on a flat surface. That's what you get. A rezoning, on the other hand, is the change in the designation of the zoning of a parcel of land. That is accomplished pursuant to the Delaware Code, Title IX, Chapter 26, and other chapters regarding legislative procedure through the enactment of a written narrative ordinance. So all the county council has to do is put down on paper, in writing, language that states that such and such parcel is hereby rezoned from Category A to Category B. That's it. So that's what a rezoning is. It doesn't involve a drawing. It doesn't involve a diagram. It doesn't show proposed development. So the prospect that the term major plans, particularly those of us who deal in the land use realm, that major plans could also include a rezoning is odd. It's certainly a stretch. It's possible, it's conceivable, but once you apply the plain and ordinary meaning of the terms, then you conclude that it does not include a rezoning. So that should have been the end of the analysis in Christiana's position or their opinion. On the standard of review, we cited the court to your 2006 decision in the Champlain Cable case. That case said that the court should not defer to an agency interpretation of a statute that it is asked to apply or administer. Instead, the court may give due weight. As I said, however, earlier, though, that requires that you have an agency. And I understand there was language referenced, as Mr. Forston says, in BC Development that says that to some degree council's zoning decision is administrative in nature. However, to add to the confusion, this court's decision in Tate versus Miles, which was an earlier decision, says that it is quasi-judicial in nature. So what I think the purpose of those monikers is to determine the standard of review regarding a zoning decision. And, yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Abbott, I understand that your lead-in position is that the statute is clear in its face and that we should de novo determine that it has the meaning that you ascribe to it. What if, however, we were to find that the statute is ambiguous?
Well,
the code.
As I said before, we should read the provision in harmony throughout the UDC. I cited provisions that talk about major plan with rezoning, major plan without rezoning.
So you're saying even if it is ambiguous, you win anyway?
Correct.
All right.
There's also the expressio unius doctrine, which we believe is particularly applicable, because if council had intended to include rezonings, all it had to say is major plans and rezonings. Two more words. It didn't. It meant to exclude rezonings. The next is, of course, the principle of the golden rule, as this court has pronounced it in the Dambro case, which says do not allow an unreasonable result in your interpretation process. The unreasonable results that would arise from the developer's position are that, number one, they would read the word major plans out of that section, because what they're arguing is, in their answering brief, they've said, listen, it applies to any plan and any zoning, the exemption from the TIS LOSD requirement. Well, if that's the case, then why would county council have chosen to put in the term major plans? It would have just said there's no need for a traffic impact study. Period. But it chose the word major plans.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments. The court will take this matter under advisement, and we will also adjourn.